So now let's hear from Russ Juneau. Where has the rural surgeon from Generation X worked?
Okay, Dr. Carapresso, Dr. Anderson, thank you guys for letting me be here. Again, thanks to all of you guys staying here to the end of the session here. This is the first time I've been here on the last day, and I thought there'd be maybe like five people here. So if I get a little nervous, that's because you guys are overwhelming me a little bit. But anyway, where has the Generation X surgeon worked? I have no financial disclosures. Phil, I have to ask, like, you didn't do your JAWS slide. He had a slide with JAWS, and he was talking about, he had the theme going from there. And so, being the Generation X person, he had the original JAWS up there, but my question was, is this serious times? Is this a serious talk? And the 2018 version looks a little bit worse, and so we can take our own... draw conclusions from that. But anyway, I apologize. That's what that was. So maybe inside joke here. So what is a Generation Xer? It's kind of debatable, but most people would say it's from anybody born between 1965 to 1980. Some people even push that a little bit back. We're known as the MTV generation because MTV started when we were kids. And Generation X actually comes from a song that was Billy Idol, is the name of one of his songs. We're also called the latchkey generation. What does that mean? Is we're the first one where most of our parents were both working. And maybe some of our issues are that, so when we got home from school, we came home to an empty house. Mom wasn't there with cookies and milk for us, so maybe that, you know, leads to some of the problems we have. We're also, for the males in Generation X, we were the first generation to actually have a lower income than our fathers did at their same time and age frame, at their age level and stuff like that. Now, I know doctors are a little bit delayed, but that's the first time that's ever happened. However, right now, we make up the most leaders of most of the startup companies and entrepreneurship currently than the other generations. So who am I? I was born in New Orleans, Louisiana in 1973, graduated from high school there, living in the suburbs, didn't have any rural exposure except my grandparents, when their aunts and uncles, never did meet my great-grandparents when they were alive. We used to travel down to southern Louisiana, down in Cajun country. So I did get to see some hogs slaughtered for the first time when I was probably about 9 years old or something. But grew up in the suburbs, left Louisiana in 1991 to go to Baylor, which is in Waco, Texas, graduated from there in 95, then moved to Houston to do my medical school training, and then I left to go to University of Cincinnati in 1999. I chose that program. Dr. Joe Fisher was our chairman there. I thought he had a great general surgery program. He himself considered himself a general surgeon, and their training, the setup from when you're an intern and all that, I thought was open to general surgery. He believed in not doing a lot of the BS rotations where you wouldn't be learning how to be a surgeon. So I really liked that. We got a lot of critical care exposure early on, and so I really enjoyed that. During that time, I did 2 years of research at the Cincinnati Children's Hospital after my second year. But coming back for my third year of residency, my PGY 5 year, we do a rural rotation in southeastern Ohio in Gallup Police. We spent 3 months out there. It's very beautiful. For me, it's mountain. Again, coming from Louisiana, I guess the hills and all that stuff, really huge mountains to me. But they have a nice house for us that we lived in, and we got to practice surgery. That's all we did. It was what we called surgery camp for about 3 months. Multi-specialty group called the Holzer Clinic. There were four general surgeons, but it had every other specialty you can think of. We were the only resident there in that town. So we got to do, we had the run of the place and got to do whatever we wanted to do. Orthopedic, ENT, urology, OB-GYN, anybody asked us for help, we were there and did that. So that really opened my eyes to rural America and rural surgery. And at that time, like I said, I'd come out of my research years. I did decide I was not going to be an academic surgeon. Research for me, writing papers, was not something I enjoyed to do. So I kind of was not really depressed or questioning what I'm going to do with the rest of my life when I grow up. And so I was exposed to that and really loved it and fell back in love with general surgery again. And that's kind of what I decided, what I wanted to do. The big question then, or the big problem then, was trying to convince my wife to look into that. So, we'll just kind of go back. So my wife is an OB-GYN, we had two kids at the time, too. And some of the things that you worry about, and I think we're talking about rural training and getting people interested, is I do think people need to be exposed to rural surgery to actually see what it is, to see if you can do it. You hear about it, but you don't ever really know until you've actually been into it. And these are even some of our leaders here at the American College of Surgeons. So in 2006, when I finished, we decided to move to LaGrange, Texas. I'll show you where that is in a second. It's kind of close to where my wife grew up. She was born and raised in southern Fayette County. She moved back and forth to Houston. So we had some family there. At the time in 2005, they were building a new hospital, so we thought it was a perfect opportunity to move to LaGrange. And yes, again, I don't know what the millennials in here know, but this is the LaGrange that you're thinking of. And what do I mean? As you know, it's famous for the Chicken Ranch, which is the basis for the movie The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. And any rock fans, ZZ Top has a song about that in general. So where are we? We're kind of like right in the triangle between Austin, San Antonio, and Houston. You can see a little bit closer there. So I think it's a perfect place to live. The Austin airport is on our side of the town on that highway that you see, 71, coming through. So really easy to get in and out of. We are the southernmost part of what they call the Texas Hill Country. So again, getting back into outdoor activities, we have all the same things that everybody loves. We are the county seat of Fayette County. And the population of LaGrange itself is about 5,000 people, but we service about 40,000 in a two-county area. And do I have any Ohio State football fans out there? Anybody? All right, we are the home of J.K. Dobbins, who's their sophomore running back sensation. So I had to put a plug in for that as my boys tomorrow. I have two boys, a sophomore and a senior, and they'll both be playing football tomorrow night. And my older son did get to play with J.K. when he was still a senior. So I started private practice in 2006. Fortunately or unfortunately, that's all I know besides residency. I share an office with my wife, who's an OB-GYN. The building you see there, we built that in 2008. Thinking and planning, this is where we wanted to move. This is where we wanted to stay when we retired. Maybe that wasn't a good decision overall. But we have four full-time staff. We have an office manager, a receptionist. We have an LVN and also a medical assistant. And I do local. There's a local lady who does our billing outside the office. Being in private practice, I knew this, but then didn't know this, and this has gotten worse over time. So my other duties, in addition to just being a surgeon, include everything you see here. So I'm the HIPAA officer, the compliance officer. I'm the one responsible for doing all the MACs, MIPRA, and all that other stuff. I think my wife, I tell her, but she doesn't listen to me. She has it pretty good because all these things that are up here, she doesn't have anything to do with any of that stuff. As anybody runs an office, again, I have to be the IT. I actually took over my bookkeeping a couple years ago, but then again, I'm the plumber, the electrician, in addition to dragging my kids in there every once in a while to help me out. So, being in private practice, it is a challenge. And again, I can tell you it's not for everybody, but I think everybody needs to be open to listening to what it is. Back when Dr. Phil asked me to do this talk, I was on the communities for the Young Fellows communities. I did post a question to those guys about where they would be to the Generation X doctors and I asked them where they were working, what they thought about it, and where do they think they would be working. Didn't get a lot of response, only had about 8 response. Two of the doctors were employed, and then actually they were thinking about leaving, so that's why I think they were paying attention. They were having some issues, again, with autonomy, dealing with senior partners, and dealing with administration. One lady had actually left employment. It was just starting a private practice, and I had 5 private practice physicians. The private practice physicians, again, as we all know, like their lifestyle and being in control and also the autonomy. I also do a lot of work with the TMA, which is the Texas Medical Association, and you know, this has been a talk. The whole employment model has been a talk there too. And just to show you, for example, speaking of their membership vice president, she was saying that around the year 2000, the membership of the TMA was probably made up about 80% private practice and 20% of employed. And most of those employed docs were considered, quote, academic docs, so not anybody who worked for a real corporation. However, as of last year, that's slightly moved up. It's about 60-40 right now. And I think Texas is still, even though that's changing, we're still one of the ones who is holding out with a lot of private practice. So where do I work? My hospital is St. Mark's Medical Center. It was opened in 2005. It did replace a previous hospital, which was called Fayette Memorial Hospital, which, again, I'm learning here, was probably part of that Hill-Burton Act, which because it was opened in the early 50s. In hindsight, always being 2020, moving the facility, which, again, I guess where the Fayette Memorial is now is just in a neighborhood. And we have a small, I mean, there's a small, quote, downtown neighborhood. There's no space to really grow or any of that stuff. It's actually been converted into, it is a tech center for the high school. The Fayette Memorial Foundation donated that to the high school. And so they do shop class and the hairdressing class and all that is where those kids go. Moving, I don't know if anybody's ever moved a practice. Can be unfortunate and painful. So what happened there when they moved, all of their previous contracts with CMS and other insurance companies had to be redone. And unfortunately, they lost that battle in getting good contracts, the hospital doing that. And that happens if you move. Like I said, my own experience was we had to reapply to Medicare just when we moved from one office into that new building. And that's never fun. So again, it opened in 2005. We serve actually Fayette County, Lee County, and part of what we call Colorado County. There is another independent hospital in that county, which is about 45 miles away. We're licensed for 65 beds. We had 4 ICU beds, 3 operating rooms, 2 endoscopy rooms, and we employ about just over 200 folks. However, in 2009, we went ahead and closed our ICU unit. We still, every once in a while, will open up a bed on the floor if we need to. That was mostly due to staffing issues, reimbursement. Remember, I talked to you about the contracts and stuff like that. Excuse me. But also trying to keep good critical care nurses on staff when you just didn't have the volume to keep them interested. Also in 2009, our original CEO, who had previously been with Fayette Memorial, he also came out of the Methodist system out of Houston. But he had been at Fayette Memorial for 7 years, and he was the driving force about getting the new hospital opened. Well, right before we moved, again, I moved to LaGrange in June, July 2006. He called me before we moved, and he was diagnosed with a glioblastoma. So he had to go undergo all that. And finally, at about, I think it was the end of 2008, he passed away. So we had a really big loss there. He was a great CEO, very smart businessman, and very, very integrated into the community. And we've really not been able to replace anybody like that. So in 2009, the board went to get some outside help, and they found what's called Community Hospital Corporation, CHC. If anybody is using them, you know, come take a card. I'll give you my number. We can talk later. So these guys came in as a management group. We do pay them a monthly management fee. And they were responsible for hiring our CEOs and our administration staff and also doing some of the other management stuff. And I'll show you later, it's probably not doing a good job. Again, as a medical center, we offered all kinds of services here. However, this time last year, we had to close our birthing center. And then we also closed one of our community clinics. Now, since that time, I think it was in the summertime, our local family practice group has decided to try to open up a clinic, a satellite clinic there in Flatonia. So again, we don't have internal medicine anymore, but we did when I first started. But mostly all of our medicine is provided by family medicine. We do have cardiology. We have a group that comes out of Austin, but they do have a permanent office, and we do have two permanent cardiologists there. Again, just like everybody's probably seen the younger cardiologist, very, very good, very smart guy, but he is very hesitant about keeping anything in-house. He thinks everything needs to be right next to a cath lab and so forth. So that's good and bad. We do have pediatrics. However, we really don't use... they don't use the hospital very much. In about 2007, at the time after I had moved there, the Seton in Austin opened up the first dedicated full-time children's hospital there in Austin. So they kind of took all of our pediatric care away. We do have dermatology, which comes out of Austin just in a clinic. But we do have full-time general surgeons. We, again, just like you guys, are the endoscopists in town. We do have gynecology still. We do have a full-time orthopedic, and we have part-time podiatry ENT. We have a neurosurgeon who's a retired neurosurgeon from Austin. He still does some spine work. He's actually getting older, so he is looking into retiring. And then we do have urology. However, they've really cut back on what they're doing. I know even in general, urology is becoming more of an office-based procedure, so they're really not doing too much in-house. But again, we do have a full-time ER. We're a level 4 trauma designation. We do have a helicopter on campus. We do, and we use full-time CRNAs. I say three full times. This is in flux. We probably go into, just because of volumes, we have a new group, and they're trying to cut it back to two, but it merely makes it hard just running with two. Again, up-to-date surgical services. Last year, we did update our cameras and scopes to some high-definition scopes. But again, we seem to offer, or I offer anything, you know, what they can do in the city laparoscopically, I can do. Now, again, I've tailored my practice complex stuff. You know, I'll talk to the other surgeons in town whether we think we can take care of that or else we will send that out. Again, like I talked about, we do have cardiologists, and we do have a, quote, hospitalist program. It is run by our nurse practitioners, of our family practice, and they've mostly, they just, about 2 years ago, put a nurse practitioner in full-time. I don't know about you guys, but if I'm calling, if I need medical help, you know, no offense to nurse practitioners, but she's not going to be able to help me. So I don't think that's really helped us. But the hospital seems to think it's great. Again, one of the family practice docs has been there a long time, so it's a little bit gets political and every time we bring up trying to replace that group. Back again, when we talked about 2009, when the CHC took over, we did develop a what we call a clinical affiliation with St. David's Healthcare in Austin. So St. David's is one of mostly two big systems in Austin. The other one is Seton. I'll show you later. Baylor Scott & White is kind of trying to move into there, but Seton and St. David's were the ones. When I needed to transfer somebody before this arrangement, it was a pain in the butt. I don't know how it works for you guys, but called Austin. You call in every single hospital, and then you get the yeses, nos, and all that other stuff. So the board reached out to, with the help of CHC at the time, the St. David's, and so we formed this clinical affiliation. Basically, our guarantee was we give them all our stuff, and in return, they made it real easy for us. So now there's what we call St. David's One Call. We make one phone call, give the information out, and they look through all their, I'll show you their hospitals to find us a bed and call us back if we need to. Also, they would provide some CME. We could go up there to use their CME for both staff and physicians. And we were supposed to also use them. I've, as chief of surgery, I've called my counterpart up there a couple times when we had questions arise. Also, one of their vice presidents would therefore also sit on our board, so he would be there every month. Just to show you there, so on the left are all the St. David's facilities. They're in Bastrop. You can see that number 10 just going west of LaGrange. That used to be an acute care hospital. We used to cover that. However, that shut down, and then was bought by St. David's and turned into just a freestanding ER. But you can see on the right side, that's their full acute care facilities. All right, so moving on with St. David's Healthcare, what is that going to mean for us? Again, remember I talked to you about CHC with their management groups. There's really in my mind, and I sit on the board, has misled us and not done us a very good favor. So we're starting to have money troubles. We've gone through five CEOs, like I said, since 2005. Last one, quote unquote, I cannot say the word fired, but he decided to resign, and issues like that. So we had to close. Again, the board was sold that we close labor and delivery, that it would save us, you know, over $400,000 a year. And I'm keep asking every time I go to a board meeting, well, where's that money? Because I keep seeing doom and gloom coming on. So again, we had a member of the St. David's vice president. He was on our board. When that finally happened, he reached out to me and my wife and just talking about what was going on. So we started talking about maybe getting joining their system. Currently, again, it was approved by, so St. David's Healthcare is actually, I'll show you a chart here in a second, is actually owned by HCA. They're the majority owner, but it's still independent. And then so at the time I wrote these slides, you know, we were still going through the due diligence and looking into that. And it was supposed to be about this time that we would kind of sign the papers. And this is just to show you here what's going on with St. David. So we would join this system. That was kind of intriguing, interesting. But again, like everybody talks about, good and bad. Again, I have no personal relationships with HCA or anything like that, but from what I hear, they can be a little bit of the devilish side. I still think St. David's Healthcare would be a bit of a blessing. I think clinically, they're still very helpful to us. I've known several physicians, surgeons that work in there. Now, they really don't hire physicians right now. But who work in their system. My wife actually, again, I told you they closed L&D, so she still does. She didn't want to give up delivering babies, so she works at one of their facilities as an OB hospitalist there. And again, it's a very, very nice place to work. They really are on the ball. So again, you know, join in that group. You know, there's probably a little bit of both on there. My, you know, just being a general surgeon, I'm not an MBA. Yeah, I've run an office and stuff like that, so I think, and I've watched a lot of TV, so I think I know how to run things. My take is, it's just the management group we've had has really let us down. The analogy I give to my fellow board members is, and you guys can appreciate this, if a patient comes to your office with abdominal pain, that patient doesn't turn around and tell you exactly what they have, what procedure you're going to do, and how you're going to do that procedure. Because that's why they pay you to do that. You diagnose them with appendicitis, you decide how to do it, you take it out. So if I'm paying a management group to manage me, and you saw that website, revenue cycles, all those other things, they don't ever do any of that stuff. And they've left us as a hospital, and they do have one of their CEOs, but let us down. So St. David's, I think, I call them the professionals. Administrators actually know what they're doing compared to what I'm used to. And that's what I just kind of pulled up. They have the Disney model. You know, they know what they're doing. They're very customer service based. Again, like I said, my wife is up there. I remember to go visit her, and I ask people directions, and I find out that anybody employed by St. David's is not allowed to point. And they have to walk you to wherever you want. If I asked the question, I was lost. And so they had to personally walk me down there to that. They wouldn't just point and tell you. So again, that kind of Disney model. Nobody's really brought it up, but maybe as far as the future of rural healthcare, I keep hearing about the wheel and spokes, meaning, again, the big system will be there in the middle, and we're part of the spokes. So are we going to be a part of that? Maybe. I don't know. We'll have to see. Like I said, so I finished these slides. However, something happened a few weeks ago, and we had an emergency board meeting, and we found out that HCA, which was doing their due diligence, all of a sudden pulled their asset purchase agreement on us. So we're just left in the cold. Don't know why. My take, again, the pseudo MBA that I have, is that they think they're paying too much money for what the original offer was. So they're going to probably wait for us to go through bankruptcy. The hospital is, you know, taking it to look into the other systems. Ascension is basically Seton Hospital in Texas. So we're reaching out to those guys to see if they're interested. CHI is more in the Bryan College Station area. They moved into Houston as well. They've had some issues taking over a Houston hospital, so they basically said no. And then the other one that is somewhat interested in talking to us now is what's called Baylor Scott & White. If anybody's familiar with them, so Scott & White, Central Texas originally, they merged with Baylor out of North Texas. So they have the whole Dallas market. Well, those two merged a few years ago. And then just recently, 2 weeks ago, it's been announced that Baylor Scott & White is actually going to merge with Memorial Hermann in Houston. So that'll give these guys, I don't know how that monster is going to look when they've got pretty much the whole north and south and also eastern Texas. And they've also talked to a brokerage firm. So again, where will I be? You know, that's what I'm trying to learn here is like, where will I practice? Thank you.